Hello dear friends, I hope you are well. Welcome to the Quetzalcoatl Cultural Institute. Today we are going to study the revolution of the dialectic. It is necessary that we change, that we transform ourselves so that we can find the integral well-being within ourselves. This well-being is understood as economic well-being. This is what we normally understand, right? By adding integral well-being, we are also talking about moral, emotional, political, and social well-being, of course. That is to say, in all senses on this concept, whether from a physical point of view, being in good health, having enough money to satisfy our necessities, having a correct relationship with our family, spouse, children, parents, etc. It is also having a correct relationship in work with society, and we can call all this the integral well-being. We all have worries and bitterness in life, many difficulties, many problems, and we seek to have this complete well-being, but in fact it will not be possible to obtain by winning a jackpot in lottery, for example, or receiving an inheritance, although many of us think so. This is why many of us work a lot without taking rest, but even by doing so, we cannot achieve the desired complete well-being. Because this integral well-being is not the result of having money, but is the result of self-respect, respect for oneself. This may seem strange for a philosopher or especially for an economist, but what connection is there between self-respect an integral well-being? What we're saying here may seem very strange to us, but you need to have a little patience to understand it. How are we going to succeed in obtaining this integral well-being, and what will be the result? The result of self-respect. Before anything else, to understand the meaning of these words, we must say that each of us has our own level of being. The level of being is the spiritual level. As there are different social levels, like peasant, worker, democrats, financiers, villagers, rich people, poor people, others with even less money or almost none, etc., it is the same for the spiritual levels. The spiritual level is the inner level. It is the level of being. It is how we are at the spiritual level. Some of us are selfish. That is our level of being. Others are greedy. That is our level of being. Others full of lust. That is their level of being. Others are stingy or waste their money. This is their level of being. Others are drunkards. This is their level of being. What is really interesting is that our level of being attracts the level of our own life. It is an irrefutable reality, which means that our spiritual level attracts what is around us. We must think carefully about this. Master Samael Ombeor lived in Mexico City, in a very nice and quiet place. And at that time there were uninhabited lands. One day people arrived who we call here paratroopers. That is to say, they are people who take and settle in lands that does not belong to them and immediately build cardboard huts, sheet metal, and other similar materials. Being poor, obviously, is not a crime, and if these cabins and homes were clean and well cleaned, there would be no problem. There would be nothing to complain about. We can, of course, wallow in the mood of wealth or in the mood of poverty, and that is not the way. In all cases, this place, so pleasant, this courtier, this this place was pleasant, beautiful, calm, quiet, became, after the arrivals, arrival of these paratroopers, a place full of conflict and problems. Police patrols were going there more and more often, when never before had they needed to come. Some people imagine that by changing where they live, by changing their surroundings where they live, they will have more possibilities, more facilities to live better. But that's not the case, not always the case. Why? Because the level of being always attracts our own life. These humble cardboard shacks were really dirt and surrounded by trash and waste. There was no organization, no order. The people who lived there argued that all the time and fought constantly. This is the level of being. And let me repeat it. Poverty is not a crime. The police were still there because of those conflicts. We could live in a superb palace, you know, but we would attract, sooner or later, to ourselves, the circumstances in accordance with our level of being. Our level of being attracts our own life, our own level of life. If some of these people who attracted fights and conflicts, some of those paratroopers, change their home to go to a very calm place, there will be, once again, difficulties, fights and conflicts. Also, because of the dirt and garbage, there will be also diseases. Everyone attracts into their life circumstances related to their level of being. Suppose that one of these people who lives in these places changes his level or her level of being. It is obvious that his or her life will also change for him. Respect for oneself. Self-respect allows you to obtain this integral well-being. Yes, if one of those people would change, transform, stop stealing, stop lying, stop being delinquent, and that's what it means to have self-respect. What does it mean to have self-respect? Don't steal, don't lie, don't fornicate, do not abuse, do not envy, become humble and simple, abandon laziness, become a thief and clean. If this person changed his level of being, will also change automatically. And this respect for oneself, this self-respect will which allow to rise its level of being, will attract new circumstances around it. At least they wouldn't fight anymore, because we fight because of the lie that we have inside, because of theft, envy, anger, because of all these faults that we have in our interior. It would attract other circumstances because the level of being attracts the level of being, which means that what we are internally attracts the people who are around us externally. The people who get closer to us have the same level of being that we have. If all around us there are people who make up stories, who tell gossips, who care about the life of others, or greedy people, etc., it is because they have the same level of being that we do. It is ourselves who attract them. It is our level of being which attracts them to us. It is obvious that if we change our level of being, we will attract to us new circumstances, new relationships, which will perhaps probably change our economic situations, which means that our economic situation is the outcome of our respect for ourselves, of our self-respect. So be careful. We do not mean by this that if we have a very pleasant economic situation, if we have a lot of money, it is because we respect ourselves already. No. What we are saying is that if we live extensively, if we don't have a job, and a lot of difficulties and conflict in life, if we have respect for ourselves, then we will attract a better health, more stability in the social, political, and even economic sphere. To respect for ourselves, the self-respect changes our level of being. So by changing our level of being, we attract other circumstances into our life. When we don't respect ourselves, we make our life unhappy, even if we have a lot of money. Social well-being, economic well-being, family well-being comes from self-respect, from the respect we have for ourselves. Immanuel Kant tells us about it in his wonderful books, The Critique of Pure Reason and The Critique of Practical Reason. Indeed, Immanuel Kant affirmed that the exterior of our life is only a reflection of the interior. The circumstances around us are reflections of what we have inside ourselves. To change the exterior circumstances, it is not necessary to have a lot of money, nor to have titles or diplomas, certificates. We simply have to change our interior. Very often we see people who have many diplomas and titles, a lot of money, but do not have this complete well-being. They are not happy. Studies are of course necessary. Money is necessary too, but that is not going to give us this complete well-being that we are talking about. It is only self-respect, respect for ourselves, that will give the well-being to us, because that, as Immanuel Kant says so well, the exterior is only the reflection of what we have inside of us. The principle of integral well-being is found in self-respect, because the outside is the inside. The circumstances that surround us are the result of our self-image, because we have, of course, a self-image, that is to say, an image of what we are internally. All the selves that we have inside us give a self-image. We have an external image, but we also have a self-image which is the ensemble of pride, laziness, gluttony, envy, vanity. Our self-image and the circumstances that surround us are the outcome of this self-image. This self-image is very important, that's obvious. Professional and non-professional photographers take very interesting photos because they show us. They give us an idea of this inner image or self-image and an outer image. Our exterior image and the circumstances around us are the result of our interior image. And we repeat one more time. The inner image, the interior image, is the set of psychological defects. We call them egos, I's, me. I feel pride. I am lazy. I feel anger, right? That's why those hundreds or thousands of I, of me's, form this set of psychological aggregates that we have inside. So there are times when we do not show a psychological flaw in public, but we still have it internally. And this flaw is our self-image. This set of defects makes our self-image, our actual or current inner image. And our interior image gives an exterior image. Of course, we can appear on the outside very well dressed, very well behaved, well groomed, and very clean. But our external image is not pleasant to others. If we are despotic, if we are authoritarian, tyrannical, if we are proud and conceited, do you believe that our external image will be pleasant and beautiful? Of course not. We will give a horrible image of ourselves, even if we are very well dressed and clean. This is how the external image and the circumstances that surround us are the result of the internal image. When there is no self-respect, when there is no self-respect, when we are internally filled with moral defects, psychological defects, we will attract unpleasant events to us, and often a poor economic situation. Who is going to want an employee who is always unhappy and always complaining? Who's going to want a boss who shoots all the time? Nobody. And this is reflected in our economic situation. Are we understanding this a little bit more? This is therefore very important to realize our psychological image, the one we have internally, the one we have created, the one we have formed. One thing is the psychological image, and another, one thing is the physical image, right? The exterior image. And another thing is the psychological image. Many of us these days are poorly dressed, poorly styled, and maybe unhygienic. It's a poor external image. And if we add on top of that many conflicts, problems, difficulties, arguments with family, situations, unpleasant economic conditions, all these will only be the external consequences of what we have internally. All these problems will be the outcome of this poor, miserable inner image full of calamities. Very lustful and passionate people see how all this inner trash resurfaces externally or manifests itself in our computer, our cell phones, or on social networks. Our cell phones are full of strange sounds, lustful photos and images. That's all we can find in our technological devices nowadays, because it is a reflection of what we have inside of us. It's a faulty image that we reflect on the outside, not to mention the way we speak. Often, even if we are very polite, we are full of irony, mockery, and criticism. Even though we are very clean and very well behaved, that's who we are inside. Identity, values, and images are something unique. We have an identity, values, and an image, and this internal image gives an external image. So, a defective internal image filled with moral defects will give a poor, deficient external image, even if we are well-dressed and clean on ourselves. But our image will be deficient, maybe horrifying. An identity shows what we are, and the values we have can be very positive or negative. So we are a mathematical point in the universe. That's what we are. A mathematical point in infinite space, which serves as a vehicle for a certain number of values. And these values can be brilliant, as for example Leonardo da Vinci, who was a mathematical point in space, that serves as a vehicle for a sum of genius values, as it pertained to art and science. Someone like Beethoven, Mozart, Richard Wagner, or Jesus, Buddha, Quetzalcoatl, each one of them are or were mathematical points in space which serve as vehicles for an addition of a set of transcendental positive values. Unfortunately, most of us are mathematical points in the universe that serve as vehicles for a sum of mediocre values, filled with faults, egos. We are the vehicles of vanity, self-sufficiency, self-importance, pride, despotism, arrogance, lies. There you go, what we are. A mathematical point that serves as a vehicle for a sum of mediocre values. Identity, values, and image form a unique whole. It is what attracts our life. It is what attracts our existence. It is what attracts those around us. But it is, of course, possible to change identity, values, and image. Obviously, we can change them. We can transform them, and transform them completely. And this is only possible with a psychological revolution. It is not evolution, that will transform us. We are not simply going to change over time in a automatic way. If that were so, we would be much better than our grandparents. And we clearly see that we are not better than them. We are even worse than our grandparents. Barely 40 years ago, there was still respect among people. But nowadays, there is no more respect for anything. Most of us don't respect our parents. So, no, we are not better. Evolution does not bring change. There needs to be a psychological revolution. It is absurd that we always live in the same circle, always in the same way. We must change this identity, these values, and this image. This interior image gives an exterior image, poor, miserable, sometimes even dirty and smelly. We can be very polite and well-dressed and not present a pleasant image, because our internal image is full of faults and immoralities. And it is this which gives us this unpleasant external image. We must therefore know our interior image. What it is? Is it that of pride? Self-sufficiency? See how unbearable we may be when we are filled with self-importance, self-sufficiency, arrogance, without a little grain of humility. We become unbearable. Nobody supports us. Nobody stands us. And if our inner image is that of lust, passionate desires, what will our life be like? What will our relationships be like with people of the opposite sex? What the manifest on the outside represents, what we possess on the inside. If our inner image is filled with laziness, sluggishness, what will our surroundings be like? What will everything around us be like? We will be able to change it by having respect for ourselves, a self-respect. This is how it will be possible for us to change our life. This implies a complete psychological revolution. This respect for oneself will change our ethical aspect or psychological aspect. We will have a change in morality. A total change will occur in our interior with social, economic, political consequences. And yes, we are talking about a revolution. We are talking about the Tiger Knights, the Eagle Knights of ancient Mexico. We are talking about the Battle of Families from the Bhagavad Gita, from the Song of the Lord, from Arjuna, who fought against his relatives, his cousins. This is the battle we are talking about. It's Hercules, or the Greek Hercules against the Hydra. It is that mythological hero against Medusa, David against Goliath. These are the battles that mythology talks about. We must carry them out within ourselves. We must disintegrate the ego to truly succeed in respecting ourselves. This self-respect by stop lying, hurting, crying, being lazy, being anger, being lustful, etc. This self-respect could totally change our external life, because it is not by changing government or changing where we live, the place where we live, that we will get there. No, because wherever we go, we will take with us our circumstances of life, because they are the result of what we have inside of us. They are a reflection of what we have inside. These days, no one is happy, but no one wants to change. Let me repeat it. No one is happy nowadays, but also no one wants to change. Nobody wants to transform themselves. Nobody wants to go through this process, this transformation, these efforts. But oh yeah, we want everything around us to transform with magic words. Like that, by snapping our fingers. But things are not like that. Our exterior life can only change if we change our interior. We must accept our reality. We must identify the values that we possess internally. Our image and our identity, that's what we need to change. But above all, we must realize the identity we have, the image we have, the values we have. We must identify them, see them, discover them. We need to know how to direct our attention inward to discover them. As our Lord, left-handed hummingbird, or Huitzilopochtli said in the legend of his appearance, when the Sultaners arrived to kill his mother while he was still in her womb, he was able to communicate with his uncle. According to the legend. And he said, Huitzilopochtli said to his uncle, "Look carefully where they come from," when speaking of the 400 Sultaners. "Look carefully where they come from." Those Sultaners represent the many egos, the many psychological defects we have. By saying this, "Look carefully where they come from," he meant that we must pay close attention to all our faults. We must discover our identity, our values, and our inner image. When someone rings the doorbell, we ask, "Who is that?" And we often say, "It's me." And who is this me? What is this self? Who is this myself? This is what we need to be identified. This is what we need to identify. Directing our attention inward to self-discover is the aim of the studies here in Gnosis. My dear friends, we must direct our attention inward to introvert ourselves, turn toward our inner world, see who we are, see what we are. We are always looking outward, criticizing others, meddling in their lives. But now we have to turn ourselves inward, directing our attention to who we really are. Introversion is a very important decision to make. It is a very important step that we must take to introvert ourselves, to explore ourselves, to discover our false values, and to succeed in eliminating our negative values. We must discover ourselves as we are, because we always think that we are already very good. without reproaches and the best people in the world. If we already think that we are good people, that we are perfect, then we will never feel the urge to change. If you think you are a very good person, why would you want to change? Let the others change around us if they don't stand us, if they don't support, tolerate us. Many people dream of having been Joan of Arc in a previous life, Buddha, Quetzalcoatl, or Napoleon, or a very important character. Many political leaders think they are reincarnation of important people from the past. So yes, we are all like that. We are all the same, without exception. We think we are important, and therefore we cannot change. We cannot transform ourselves. How could we want to change if we think we are already fine or perfect? On the other hand, when someone decides to become introvert, to direct their attention inward, to monitor their thoughts and feelings, to be attentive to what they do internally, to discover their psychological defects in order to be able to eliminate them, it's something great. It's a great decision. It would be truly fantastic if everyone could make such a decision. Anyone who begins to do it will realize that it is not as easy as that. That becoming introvert is not something easy, because of psychological defects, those that we possess within ourselves, they don't like being observed and monitored all the time. They don't appreciate our attention being focused on them at all. Why? Because by watching over and observing them, we could discover them. And by discovering them, we could study them. And by studying them, we could disintegrate them. The ego doesn't like that at all. It doesn't please to all those thousands of psychological aggregates that we have inside us at all. They don't want us to observe ourselves at all. They don't want to be discovered. So, when we try to become introverted, when we try to observe ourselves, when we try to meditate, to understand this or that fault, whether it is that of anger, gluttony, or envy, for example, or that of lust, criticism, or whatever it may be, there appears in us a force that opposes it, a force that opposes our introversion. This force is called the force of countertransference. This force opposes our introversion. It prevents us, by all means, from self-discovery. The ego wants to prevent us from knowing ourselves, because that would mean it's dead. And it does not want to die, of course. It feels very good within us. It lives from our vitality. All these defects are like vampires, thousands of vampires living from our lives, from our vitality, from our energy. These defects are like monsters in us. They absorb our vitality and do not want to die. And if we discover internally these negative values to achieve our self-respect and to change our life, the ego is in danger, and then arises in us this force of countertransference. The ego puts obstacles in our way so that we cannot become introverted. This force of countertransference is different from everyone, but it always arises to prevent us from observing ourselves. It even manages to manifest itself in truly incomprehensible things. For example, a person starts to meditate and suddenly a neighbor arrives at the same time, at exactly the same time. But how did she manage to arrive just as we were beginning to do our meditation? Well, if it's not a neighbor or a friend, it is a family who shows up unexpectedly. these forces of content transference always intervene in the moments when we have decided to meditate. At the precise moment when we want to meditate, it's true. So we are relaxing, right? We are happy. We sit comfortable to meditate, comfortably to meditate, right? We mean our own businesses. We don't worry about anything. We relax properly. And suddenly, the neighbor placed very loud music in the apartment next door. He may put it on often every day, but this time that we are trying to meditate, we identify a lot with the music, and we are then unable to introvert ourselves to meditate. But we start a meditation, and suddenly we start feeling anxiety that rises within us, and we cannot concentrate. Many events get in a way to prevent us from becoming introverted, and for each person, it will be different. It will be something different. What happens is that the ego searches for the weakest point in us in order to cling to it. It hits where it hurts. It doesn't want us to meditate. So this strength can manifest in many ways. There are people who, during their meditations, look how smart this ego is. There are people who, during their meditation, see extraordinary, wonderful things. And this is very common in pseudo and pseudo-occultist circles. Pseudo-esoteric and pseudo-occultist circles. So they say, they end up saying, Jesus himself appeared to me in person. Yes, sure, because he has nothing else to do. And they continue. Jesus came into my meditation. He blessed me. He gave me a secret mantra to do this or that thing. You know? But these are only fantasies provoked by the force of counter-transference, which acted at that moment. What are our weak points? If we are a person full of vanity, of spiritual pride, maybe we may not have possessions, but what we are proud of is esoteric or spiritual achievements. So if that is our weakest point or weakest defect, this is precisely where the ego rushes in to distract us, so that we do not meditate, so that we do not succeed in observing ourselves while we think we are having extraordinary transcendental experiences. But which one? Since it is the ego that deceived us and made us deviate, this person of the example will not be able to meditate anymore because he will be fascinated by those images. But he ignores that those images were fantasies provoked by the ego, precisely with the purpose of distracting him. By doing this, the ego succeeded. It has succeeded in ensuring that we no longer observe it, we no longer study it, our introversion is cancelled, we no longer realize that we are selfish, for example. Our attention has gone elsewhere. We are all different, right? We must also discover this force of content transference and our weakest point. So we must identify this effect and discover this force to get over it. When we psychoanalyze ourselves internally, intimately, when we seek to truly discover ourselves, this force of countertransference arises, and we must transcend it. We must overcome it. This is what Thales of Milet says. In this temple of Delphi, in ancient Greece, it is written, "Nocete ipsum." Know yourselves, and you will know the universe. We cannot change what we do know. No. You have to know something to be able to change it, right? If we do not know ourselves, superficial changes are useless. We must know ourselves perfectly. And for this, we must do a self-analysis. See ourselves as we really are, and not look at the faults of others, which is of no use. Discover what we are, who we are, what we must do. But when we try to do this self-analysis, this force of counter-transference appears. It arises and settles in our meditations. If we are cold, if we are hot, the mosquitoes are beating us more than ever, so we can hear the noise our neighbor is making. Everything bothers us at that moment. Everything. You know what? That is the force of countertransference keeping us from performing this practice of meditation. This practice precisely where we aim to discover and study our psychological defects. So, as long as this force is present in us, we cannot do anything. So we must transcend it. But how can we do it? Because if it is always present in us, if we do not conquer it, it will stay there. And no matter how hard we try, we will achieve nothing. We will be able to transcend it thanks to two analyses. When it appears inside us, we must do two kind of analysis. A structural analysis and a transactional analysis. The structural analysis consists of seeking to know the structures of the ego which prevent us from introverting. It's like a house. It has its structure, right? Its foundations which support it. You must therefore know the structures of the ego, its mechanism of action, its way of manifesting itself. You must know all of this. And when we know this, the force of the counter-transference disappears. It fades away. And we can then become introverted. We can overcome this obstacle. But you have to really want to. And put all your enthusiasm, all your faith into it, and do this structural analysis well. We also need to do transactional analysis. So what is a transaction? When we go to the bank, we make a banking transaction, we put money in our account, and we can, with this money, buy a house, for example. So there is a transaction, an exchange of money for a material good, right? A transaction is also a change, a struggle. These are also the relationships that the fault have with each other. A fault, a psychological defect, never acts alone. It is always accompanied by one or other faults or defects. For example, we get angry. And why do we get angry? Often out of vanity. So there is an anger related to vanity. It is because of vanity, is hurt, that anger appears. So there is a relationship between anger and vanity, right? And also, when our self-esteem is hurt, anger arises in us at the time. So anger is related to self-esteem. Or a lover tried to misbehave with his fiancée and she pushes him away, which is okay, of course. This hurts the fiancé's ego of lust and he gets angry. You see? So anger is related to many other faults. The force of the counter-transference begins to act on these weak points and prevent us from introverting, to internalize ourselves, to self-explore. If we do this transactional analysis correctly, the force of the counter-transference loses its strength. The ego loses its force, and we can then introvert, self-explore, self-discover successfully. Structural analysis and transactional analysis are therefore the key to overcoming this force of counter-transference. This is what we need to overcome. This terrible force that is happening to all of us. We must therefore demonstrate consistency, courage, discipline, and will to overcome this force of counter-transference. And the key to doing so is the structural analysis and transactional analysis. And then everything is different. The ego will always look for a weak point to attack it. It will monitor us and detect all our weak points that it can attack to distract us. To liberate our essence, we need our self-exploration to be total. When we self-explore, we can separate one defect from the others. We can isolate it, annihilate it, dissolve it, and then intervene the Divine Mother to disintegrate it. When we have understood this defect completely, deeply, and for this, it is not enough of a single meditation, of course, but many meditations to understand a defect thoroughly. There are faults that we can understand in a week or two, but there are others that we can only understand after months and months of meditation. And sometimes there are egos for which it will take us a lifetime to understand. But the things is not so easy. The path is there in self-exploration. When we discover a defect, the essence is freed. We can therefore embody our values of being, the values of the Father. This is the system. This is the way of doing things. This is not at all an easy or quick thing. It doesn't happen overnight, you know? There are never miraculous changes, because everything happens gradually. It is hard work, which requires tenacity, willpower, courage. It is a great interior work, of course. It is by dissolving our defects that we can change our inner image, our self-image, by eliminating lust, eliminating pride, laziness, gluttony. The self-image is transformed into a mystical self-image, completely spiritual, and it will result in a noble person and a very good citizen. He will become a person who will fulfill all these physical duties. He will not abandon his wife or his children to follow a spiritual path. Of course not, because that is fanaticism. He will perfectly fulfill his duty as a father or mother, or as a son. And if he is a son, he will be an excellent student, an excellent worker, an excellent citizen. He will be a beacon of light for society and for humanity. He will have destroyed the ego and this will result in a mystical self-image. And of course, he will have circumstances and events in his life that are beneficial in every sense of the term around him and for those who will live with him or her, whether an elderly person, an adolescent, or a child. All will benefit from this mystical image. He will give a wonderful external image. He will be a golden link for humanity, an example in all areas for people, a fountain of happiness like Jesus was, or like Buddha was, like Quetzalcoatl, or like Hermes. He will be enlightened. This is the result of self-respect, the result of having changed his inner image. We must first of all know how to dominate our minds, and not those of others, the mind of others. There is no point in wanting to dominate the minds of others. We must dominate our own mind. We need a realistic system to succeed in controlling our own mind. Many psychological schools teach us to control the mind of other people, but this is of no use. We must control our own minds. And to do so, we must know how our minds work and why they work. For example, to say that we must know ourselves, to direct our attention inward, toward our interior world. We need to know how it works, what its mechanisms are, how it defends itself, what things it is hiding from us, how it reacts, etc. The mind is like a lake. So if we throw a stone in the lake, it responds to the impact by making concentric circles, right? Our mind does the same by reacting to the impacts of the outside world. So we have a problem, a conflict, and our mind makes a mountain out of it. It reacts to the impacts of the outside world. Observe a meeting of people having a debate. Politics, or even the parents at school, in a meeting of parents. Someone says something and another person immediately feels attacked. The mind reacts to the words. It thinks that these words are addressed to it, to him, personally. So, someone says, those who didn't do their job. And we immediately think, I know I didn't do it, so he's talking about me. Why is he talking about me? Why is he talking about me? Since I'm a good person, I may haven't paid my monthly payments for 6 months, but it doesn't matter. I'm not a bad person. He's making fun of me. See how we may react? The mind reacts. We feel attacked, and we respond with stronger words. The other person responds in turn, and the argument, the conflict, begins. And all of this, because of what? Because of our mind. This is why we absolutely must understand how our mind works. Someone pats us on the shoulder and asks if everything is okay. And we respond by being pleasant and happy. Where then is our freedom? And if someone says harsh words to us, if he insults us, we react by getting angry and frowning. Why? Where is our freedom? What is our freedom? We end up being slaves. A friend comes. He invites us to a party, he invites us for a drink, then two drinks, then three, and this friend made fun of us. He made us drunk. So where is our freedom? We are at a party, a lady charms us, and Here we are fornicating and committing adultery. Where is our freedom once again? We must have the will to know ourselves. We cannot deny our true identity, our true values, and our true image. Is our true identity, our true values, our true image, that we must have the ego or the personality? Of course not. We are called to have a true identity, true values, and a true image. But these must be those of the being, of the human cosmos, of the cosmos man. This is what we must arrive at. This is what we must seek to have. Today, we are full of materialism and vices. We are on the path of the mistake, of error. We follow the easiest path, which does not require struggle. So we watch television without thinking about anything. We don't care about our neighbors. And everything that happens around us doesn't matter to us. In fact, no one interests us. Our society fills our mind with this false culture, the means of communication, the internet, social networks, advertisement, films. This false culture, which saturates our mind, in our psyche, is of no use. This only trains assassins and delinquents. We train people who marry today to divorce tomorrow. And who cares about the children? Who cares about the children? We fill our minds with all these false values. The true values are denied. Nowadays, remaining faithful to your spouse is very frowned upon. We even make fun of faithful people. Why? Because we cultivate false values in ourselves. We deny our true values. In the space, in the universe, everything is but a mathematical equation. Every planet revolves around the sun in a mathematical way, precisely defined, precisely calculated. It's all a question of mathematics. The true image, the real one, the one that we shall have, this image which is beyond the ego, should be mathematical, exact, precise, like a Pythagorean table, because the actions of the being are like a mathematical formula. The being manifesting in ourselves causes mathematical actions, precise words. The action of the being are mathematical, precisely like the Pythagorean table. They are thus full. This is indeed what we must seek. We must ensure that the being can manifest in us, that the being is able to take us to do brilliant works for humanity, for our family, for our society. That's what we need. So we need to prepare ourselves to let the Father, who is in secret, to manifest through us. He to succeed in having the Father who is in secret, the being, to manifest in him, will be an enlightened one. But for this, we must have a true identity, true values, and a true self-image. There is a laconic action of the being. It is a concise action. It is the action of the Father, the manifestation of the Spirit, full in work, in the family, or at work, or in life. And for that someone can have these kind of actions, he must renounce the fruit of the action, to expect nothing in exchange, to feel a true love for his fellow men, and to succeed in having a celestial image, a self-image which will allow him to use his physical vehicle, his body, in a wonderful way. It is then the being who manifests himself by doing brilliant works like those which built the pyramids of Egypt, the pyramids of Teotihuacan or Chichen Itza, or the works done by Moses or Hermes Trismegistus, or those of Jesus, of Krishna. There, in those examples, their being was able to express through them, to express himself, because the ego expresses itself, but the being is the only one who can express by himself. My dear friends, in this way we will end up our lecture for today. We strongly recommend you the conference found in the book The Revolution of the Consciousness, The Revolution of the Dialectic. There you will find the subject we studied today. We also recommend that you listen to the conference in audio directly from the voice of Master Samael Aumbeor on our website in the audio section. This conference is called also The Revolution of the Dialectic. And this is suggested for you to deepen in what we studied today. Dear friends, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much for your attention. Have a great weekend. We wish the peace get into your interior, the peace get into your real being, and to group these longings, we say to you all inverential peace. Dear friends, once again, thank you so much. Have a great weekend. Goodbye.